You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Okay, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartmann. You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. And as stated last week, I will be in today, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and Tom will be broadcasting his regularly scheduled show tomorrow. So without further ado, we do have a guest on the line right now, so I want to get to that, and then afterwards we will get to the Freedom Lines, and many of you know that number, 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. So you can start getting in the queue right now. But first up is Nicole Wu, and many of you know who Nicole is. She is the Director of Domestic Policy, Center for Economic and Policy Research, and we're going to be talking today about saving our Social Security and Medicare and what the chained CPI actually means and what it will actually relate to. So without further ado, Nicole, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
It's great to have you here, Nicole. Now, Nicole, before we get into what actually the chained CPI is, tell our listeners what the current measure is. How are Social Security and Medicare benefits sort of tied to a certain index? So at least we have sort of a framework in which to operate.
Well, I'd like to focus on Social Security for a moment.
Sure.
Basically, they take a look at earnings of workers over their entire working life. I think they take the top 35 years of earnings, and they figure out what your starting out amount is, how much you'll get every month. And for lower income workers, they do get a higher like proportion of their regular working wages in retirement. So there is some progressivity to the program where wealthier people get like a lower percent of what they had been making before they retired than working class or middle class workers. And then every year there's a COLA, a cost of living adjustment for Social Security. Mm-hmm. That's based on the government's official measure of inflation. And this chain CPI that we're hearing about is a way to change the way that these adjustments are made. And basically it makes Social Security benefits grow more slowly as people get further into their retirement.
Now, why do they call it chain? What's the whole? Okay, anytime I hear the word chain, Nicole, I get a little nervous and anxious.
Yeah, that's rightly so. So the CPI stands for Consumer Price Index, and that's just one of the ways of measuring prices paid or inflation. And chained is just a technical way to describe a different way, a relatively new way to measure it. And they take a look at the way that people behave when they are faced with price increases. So the current CPI actually has, the current cost of living adjustment, the CPI, does look a little bit at some of the changes that people make, like if you switch from steak to hamburgers because, you know, the price of steak has gone up. That's already baked into the current inflation measure. It's already in there. The chain CPI looks at bigger shifts that people do, like if you can't afford beef, you might switch to chicken, or you might switch to cheese, or you might, you know, instead of using a car, you might switch to public transportation. It looks at big changes in spending and makes adjustments. So it reflects not the price increases, but actually the spending in reaction to changes in prices. And so when you chain the CPI, it actually shows inflation growing more slowly. And so for people who are retired, once they start getting their benefits, every year their adjustment would be a little bit smaller than it would have been under the old measure.
Which is the COLA?
The cost of living adjustment would be smaller every year.
Right.
And I think if you talk to most senior citizens, they would not say that their annual cost of living adjustments have been too big. Most of them would tell you it's the opposite, that it's too small. And there's actually some evidence to that as well. The Bureau of Labor Statistics that looks at these inflation adjustments actually have an experimental sort of project they've done to look at what seniors do, because seniors actually can't substitute and change their spending patterns as much as the rest of us. A lot of them spend a lot of money on health care and prescription drugs and their housing.
Right.
And it's really, you can't really substitute that stuff out. And so the experimental index, looking just at seniors, it's called the CPIE for elderly, shows actually exactly what most seniors would tell you, which is that their rate of inflation is actually a little higher than the rest of us. So it seems that the chain CPI would go in absolutely the opposite direction from what would be the most accurate thing for seniors.
Yeah, I mean, because when you look at healthcare, I mean, I'm a physician as well, Nicole, and, mm-hmm. you know, when I see the cost of healthcare, one, as a consumer, the inflation is outrageous. It far outpaces any other type of inflation that we see in our economy. But in particular for seniors, I would have to think that they're hit even harder with respect to healthcare inflation.
Right, that's absolutely right. So, you know, this proposal to put the chain CPI in to Social Security is applying, you know, this new adjustment, this new index of inflation to exactly the wrong population. And since this, we are talking about official measures of inflation, the assumption is that this would apply across the board to all the other places that we have the old measure, the old CPI. And that includes, you know, things like anything that's tied to the federal poverty level, which is, you know, like food stamps or the EITC, veterans benefits, mm-hmm. disabled people, school lunch, and Medicare premiums. Those would all be affected. And then also, you know, our income tax brackets, they're tied to inflation. The rate at which our income tax brackets move up, that would be slowed down, which would mean that people would jump up to a higher tax bracket more quickly than in the past. So it would actually be a tax increase for the vast majority of us as well. And so, you know, this would have effects across, you know, the federal, you know, all federal, not all, but a whole lot of federal programs that are tied to the official measure of inflation.
Yeah, interesting. Now, President Barack Obama Wednesday is supposed to unveil his budget and his recommendations, and I know there's been a lot of hoopla regarding Social Security and this chain CPI. Do we know for sure, Nicole, whether or not the president is making this specific proposal, or is it hearsay at this particular point? Because there sure seems to be a lot of controversy surrounding this, and he hasn't yet released it officially.
That's right. So this is the funny thing about Washington. We have these leaks, which generally are, you know, have sort of been sanctioned by somebody to make a leak. So the fact that it's leaked out and that a number of news resources have reported on this shows that there's a really good chance that it's in there. You know, they prepare these things pretty far in advance. You know, certainly there are a lot of folks who are trying to make calls into the Hill right now to affect what comes out on Wednesday, but a lot of people think that they've already kind of written the document, done the math, and the chances of changing it at this point are pretty slim. So, you know, that doesn't mean people shouldn't make their opinions known.
Sure.
But, you know, releasing that kind of a detail a few days in advance kind of shows that, you know, somebody decided to leak this information out because it was in the document. And
you know,
it does seem like the White House, you know, official statements have been pretty much, you know, they have not said it's not in the president's budget next week. So we can kind of read between the lines, I think.
So let me ask you this then. Is this something, Nicole, from your perspective, that Republicans on the other side of the aisle are supportive of as well? Or what are we hearing with respect to that?
Well, in general, the president's spokespeople have been saying that this is a compromise. This is putting in a change that the Republicans have been asking for. They've been asking ever since the election, you know, before the 2012 elections, you know, I think you might remember President Obama was getting criticized for making any cuts or thinking of any cuts to Social Security or Medicare. But right after the elections happened, the Republicans switched, totally reversed themselves and started calling for changes to Medicare and Social Security, cuts to Social Security and Medicare. And House Speaker Boehner came out saying, well, you know, this probably isn't enough. We probably need more cuts to Social Security and Medicare. So this is something that they've been calling for. Although I don't think, you know, regular people, you know, who aren't politicians agree. AARP came out with a poll last week showing that even Republican voters are against
this. All right.
Security.
Well, listen, Nicole, we got to run right now, but we appreciate your time on the air. Thanks for the insight.
Thank you so much.
Okay, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more, and the Freedom Lines will open them up in a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Dr. Mike Newcomb broadcasting from 1480 KPHX, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. All Alrighty, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike sitting in today and the rest of the week with the exception of tomorrow. The Freedom Lines are open right now at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. That's 1-866-987-8466. Going to get right to the calls. Eric, interesting little interview there with Nicole Wu talking about chain CPI. And basically it sounds like a roundabout way to just cut Social Security benefits over a slow sort of incremental way. Over decades, basically.
Yes, that's what it sounded like, Mike.
That's what it sounds like to me.
I agree.
You agree. All right, so let's see what our callers have to say about this because, you know, I am not a fan, quite frankly, of cutting Social Security benefits. I'm not a fan of cutting Medicare benefits. I think there's so much other fat in the budget that we can cut out. I mean, when it comes to all of the type of giveaways that are out there with respect to corporations. I mean, why do corporations who are multi-billion dollar corporations need any type of capital whatsoever from us, the taxpayer, to fund their private businesses? And we literally spend billions and billions of our dollars. We give it away to people like ExxonMobil and, you know, British Petroleum, and all of these companies are the recipients of our largesse. But yet when it comes to frail, debilitated, weak seniors, you know, who are in their golden years and just trying to live out their final days with dignity and respect. And we're not talking about a lot of money when it's a benefit, Social Security benefits. Those checks, Eric, they're not like 10 grand a month that you're getting with respect to Social Security. I mean, it's really peanuts.
You barely can eat.
Right, in the scheme of things. So why would anyone, let alone our president, want to further reduce those benefits is beyond me. But that's why we're going to open up the Freedom Lines right now and see what you guys have to say. So let's go first to Frank. He's listening on freespeech.org from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Frank, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, thank you very much, and it's nice talking to you.
Likewise.
As I understand it, this new budget deal is going to offer chain CPI cuts for $600 billion in tax increase on them. Now, I did some numbers, rough calculations that went to the Social Security website, and I found that there were 62 billion Americans on some kind of Social Security.
Wait, hold on. Rephrase it. You said there's 62 billion Americans. What are you trying to say here?
This is how many people are receiving benefit checks.
Right.
Benefit
and
payments.
And how many did you come up with?
I read this off the Social Security page. There were 62 billion.
People?
Yeah.
No, they can't be. It can't be right, Frank. There's only like 6-7 billion in the whole planet.
No, I'm sorry, Billy. I meant million.
All right, that's a little different.
No, thank you very much. I hate when people do that, but but 62 million. Now, not all of them are working retirees. There are 37 million working retirees. But here's the point. Bernie Sanders said that this will amount to a $650 yearly cut in their Social Security. Social Security benefits.
Sure.
If you multiply that by 62 billion, you come up with $400 billion.
Right. It's substantial.
So what that means is they're taking $400 billion out of the economy.
Sure.
People don't no longer have that. That's all they spend. The average Social Security payment is $1,230.
Right.
Now, if you're going to reduce that, that's taking $400 billion. Now, the other insult is they haven't yet specified what this tax cut, $600 billion, actually means. You know, where is this tax cut going to come from? Is that stuff they already owe us because these have been, these deals that they made?
No, I mean, look, you bring up a lot of interesting points here, Frank. Let me do this because the phone lines are packed right now. I want to get to other callers, and I'm going to keep your thought, your nugget alive here, okay? So just listen to what other people have to say, and I appreciate it. Thanks, Frank.
Oh, thank you very much. Bye.
All right, that's Frank from Cambridge. But he brings up an interesting point here because the bottom line is if there are 62 million, let's say, beneficiaries of Social Security, and he's talking about an average cut of almost, $500 a year, you are looking at billions and billions of dollars that are, one, going to be taken away from people who are on Social Security who need that to live month to month, day to day. But on top of that, again, you're pulling out of the economy, $400 plus billion, $450 billion, that is substantial. I mean, that will totally slow the economy. And see, this is where you get into differences of opinion, because you got those deficit hawks who believe in austerity measures, and what they mean by austerity is that taking benefits away from the least of thee and then pretty much letting them sink or swim on their own, when in reality, the people at the upper echelons of the income scale, whether it's the top one half of 1% or whatnot, they are the beneficiaries of our largesse, if you will. They get most of the tax cuts and the loopholes and things like that, and their benefits are not going to be cut hardly at all. I mean, if you have somebody who's a millionaire and they get, you know, a cut, say, of $400, $500 in a year from their Social Security benefits, they don't really care. But if somebody has those benefits, and like he said, it's about $1,230 a month, let's assume that that's correct, that makes a big difference for somebody who relies on that modicum of monthly income. So let's see what other people have to say about this. 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. We're talking about what we're thinking might appear in President Barack Obama's recommendation, his budget that's to come out this upcoming Wednesday. And speculation, according to the leak that Nicole Wu had told us earlier, is that this chain CPI, in other words, this index, the consumer price index, and the way that they look at this chain CPI will ultimately result in less benefits over time, and it'll hurt those who most need those benefits. So this is something that obviously a lot of progressives, a lot of liberals are very up in arms about right now. Again, we don't know all of the specifics yet. And then on top of that, even if Obama proposes it in a budget, it's going to be very difficult to get consensus in the Republican-controlled House. And that's just, you know, my take on that. So we're going to be back. I'm sure we still got Nadine on the line from San Diego. We still got Armand, Dave, Jerry, Corky, Steve, all these people waiting in the queue. We'll be with you shortly.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. We're going to continue our discussion right now. The Freedom Lines are open at 1-866-987-8466. First up in the queue is Corky, who's listening on freespeech.org from Hilton, New York. Corky, what's on your mind today?
Oh, doctor, I watched Bill Maher this weekend, Friday night.
Uh-huh.
And he was on with Steve Moore and Senator Sanders.
All right, Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders. And they were arguing back and forth about Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And Senator Sanders said that the Social Security has a $3 trillion surplus, which nobody argues with that figure.
Right.
Based on what they've taken in and what they paid out over the years. And Stephen Moore said, no, the lockbox is empty, but a bunch of pieces of paper, U.S. bonds in there. Now, since when did U.S. bonds become worthless?
Right.
And right. I don't understand how they could be worthless. Are we bankrupt? I mean, when you own a business, isn't that accounts receivable?
Sure.
Owe you money?
Sure. No, absolutely. What do you think about overall, though, Corky, the concept of actually reducing benefits to Social Security recipients over time? Is that something that you think we need to do because the budget deficit, or do you think there are other areas in the budget that we can look at to reduce cost or to sort of have fiscal austerity, if you will? I mean, do you think we really should be targeting Social Security and Medicare and the safety net programs that we have here in this country?
I don't think you can do anything. If you want to run your budget like everybody in the family has to run their family budget, I can't borrow against my credit card until I'm up to date on the payments.
Right,
As far as I'm concerned, you're way behind $3 trillion in payments.
Exactly.
So don't
exactly.
even talk to me about borrowing more money or changing anything that the pay structure until you're caught up to date. Once that fund is received, it's what you owe the American people, then mm-hmm. don't even talk about it.
Right. No doubt about it. All right, listen, let me get to the other callers. I appreciate it, Corky. Thanks for calling in today.
All right.
All right, that's Corky from Hilton, New York, weighing in with his thoughts here on the Tom Hartman program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in right now. The Freedom Lines are open at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. One of the things that I definitely agreed with Nicole Wu, though, was the fact that when you look at this chained CPI, this consumer price index, it's not really fair to sort of lump seniors into the same demographics and categories as everybody else, because the bottom line is, like Nicole had alluded to, seniors really focus on two things, particularly at the end of your life. You focus on health care, which makes complete sense. We all know that. As you get older, your body weakens, it deteriorates, it breaks down, and you have a lot more associated healthcare costs attendant to that. So obviously healthcare costs are paramount for seniors. But when you look at just inflation in general and you look at healthcare by far outpaces practically any other segment of our economy that you can think of when it comes to inflation. I mean, you look at healthcare costs, I don't know about you, Eric, but I've looked at like premiums that you have to pay, sometimes those premiums go up easily double digits every year. I mean, 10%, 12%. And this has happened year after year after year, where healthcare costs just keep skyrocketing. And I would have to think, obviously, that 10, 12% rises every year, that's a hell of a lot more than what inflation goes at a year, maybe 2% or 3% at most. So
yeah, there it's crazy pricing out there, you know?
No, it's absolutely, absolutely insane. So the healthcare costs are by far outpacing normal inflationary costs for other goods and services. Then also housing. You know, housing is another big issue with seniors, and those costs are very difficult too. So I agree with Nicole Wu that we should have a chain CPI that's tied really to the elderly and their unique circumstances. And I think if we were able to do that and get that kind of index in there, then guess what? I don't think over time there will be an attrition in the benefits paid out to Social Security beneficiaries. I think, on the contrary, if you adjust it yearly based off of those healthcare costs and those housing costs, then it should keep pace with inflation and there should not be a reduction, but at least, you know, a maintenance of those particular benefits that keeps up with inflation. All right, let's get back to some of the other calls. Let's go next to Nadine. She's been holding for some time. She's listening online from San Diego, California. Nadine, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I'm calling on immigration reform. And we have an issue right now in front of the Hilton Hotel in Mission Valley where the workers are on a fourth day hunger strike. They're going to end it tomorrow, trying to preserve the jobs of 9 workers at the Hilton that have been trying to organize a union. And what the company did is that they ran E-Verify, which is completely optional, to try to kick people out. They have the support of the political leaders in the city, as well as Congressman Scott Peters and Congressman Juan Vargas. And Congressman Vargas actually announced that he's intending to introduce a bill in Congress to basically give a general amnesty so E-Verify cannot be used as a tool of labor suppression or union organizing.
Interesting. So now this is outside a Hilton hotel, you said?
Yes. Yes.
And right now, how many workers are actually participating in this hunger strike?
We have 9 workers. They were joined by Richard Barrera of the San Diego Board of School Board of the San Diego Unified for the first 24 hours. They were also joined by faith leaders, Reverend Johnson, that basically joined them for the 4 or 5 days. And yesterday we had Mayor Filner here talking to them, as well as the Central Labor Council leaders. And Lorena Gonzalez, who happens to be the Central Labor Council, said that E-Verify is used, generally speaking, to do this, to suppress labor organizing. They had a case last year where they used it against janitors.
Interesting. All right. Well, listen, we appreciate the call, Nadine, and thank you for calling in and let us know what's happening out there in San Diego, California. Thank you, sir.
And if I can give you one, hashtag San Diego 9.
Hashtag San Diego 9. All right. You got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Okay, let's get back to some more of the Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let me go next to Steve. He's also listening on Free Speech, and he's calling from our local area here, Phoenix, Arizona. So, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Dr. Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. So you're a little disgusted about these potentially proposed cuts to Social Security and the safety net, correct?
It's total nonsense. It's a grand bargain, but the only grand bargain of it is it's for the Republicans and the 1%, you know. FDR, he put this stuff in place, you know, as a safety net, and the Republicans, they've been trying to chip away at this for, they never did like it. And
right.
It's kind of a slippery slope. You start doing a change CPI, the cost of living index, and then pretty soon you start doing means testing. And then, you know, pretty soon before you know it all together, we don't even need the program anymore. And that's just not the way to go. You know, healthcare costs are going up, and, you know, people don't have, you see, that what, $25,000 in their 401ks and stuff?
Well, actually, what he was, yeah, they were saying that for savings, that most people at that particular age group, I guess in general, is less than $25,000 of savings. So one medical illness could bankrupt you.
Oh, easily. And you being a geriatric physician, you
right.
see it all.
Absolutely.
And you know how this goes for people. In fact, what they ought to be doing for Social Security instead of doing this change CPI, he needs to lift the cap. You know, it's capped, you know, off of the payroll earnings, you know, the taxes.
Right, right. Right. No, you know, you're right, because then disproportionately, if you're wealthy, you end up, you know, really not paying a whole lot of into the Social Security system as a percentage of your income, I should say.
Exactly. Not at all. And, you know, is for the well-being of our society as a whole, you know, because we don't want to look like a third world country. We want to, you know, keep a modicum of a decent middle class here. And, you know,
what do you think the president's thinking, Steve? Let's try to go through the mind of the president. Obviously, we as progressives and liberals would not receive that very well if that's in the budget. We don't want to see the safety net weaken further. But what do you think he's going to get out of this? I mean, as far as a grand bargain, I can't see what concessions he's going to get from the right, because they're unwilling to concede or compromise on anything.
I can't agree with you more. That's exactly it. They're going to give him nothing. They're going to do nothing. He should frankly just tell them basically to jam it, you know, and remain steadfast. It's nonsense. They're not going to play ball with him at all. Their main goal is to make him look bad. The Democrats look bad. They met in the caucus room, you know, the night of the inauguration, you know, all 14 of them with Frank Luntz and Ryan and all the rest of them to discuss how to say no and bring down Obama's presidency the very night of the initial inauguration back
right,
in 2009.
Right. Right. So that's been their mantra from day one, and I agree. I just don't see them willing to compromise. I know even today, Senator Harry Reid, and we could talk about this a little later, about the filibuster, like even he's getting really sick and tired of the intransigence and just them putting up barrier after barrier after barrier, and we just cannot get the work of the people done with all these Republicans just who are hell-bent on opposing Obama no matter what he proposes. So it's kind of interesting. All right, well, listen, I appreciate the call, Steve. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you, Doc.
All right, you got it, buddy. All right, well, listen, we're going to be back. We still got a bunch of calls in the Freedom Lines here. We're going to get right to you when we get back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX, this is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back, my friends. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. We're going to get right to the Freedom Lines as we speak. Lots of people hanging in and want to talk about what's happening out there. And let's go first to Timothy. He's listening also on Free Speech in Columbus, Ohio. So, Timothy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Doc. I wanted to touch, I've been listening to you over the past few days or last week, about containment on costs in healthcare.
Yes.
And I was trained as a physician in the United Kingdom, and I worked under the National Health Service for 17 years. I also worked under the French National Health Service for about 4 years. And, you know, the whole thing here is that even if you move to a single-payer system, whether it's distributing that to a third party or acting as a third party payer itself,
right,
you still can't get the kind of controls that you need like you can get with a National Health Service model.
Correct.
Where you own everything and you have absolute control of those costs and you can maintain quality of service. Mm-hmm. And still keep those costs way below what you can do in any other way. And that's really the only way that this country's going to have to go. Because these halfway steps, these baby steps, these Band-Aids, it's just not a thing.
Well, Timothy, you mentioned two very important points here, and let's talk about that. Because first of all, you come from the United Kingdom, or you trained out there, correct, in that system. Right,
right,
and that's a single payer.
I grew up there, and but I was American, but we lived there. I grew up there, and I didn't come back here until after I had stopped working and decided to.
But you're familiar with a single payer system and how it operates,
well,
obviously.
Right, because there are some European countries have a single payer system as opposed to the National Health Service model system.
Right.
So they
right.
function very differently,
well,
because they don't own any of the facilities, or they don't directly employ
right.
Any of the workers.
All right. Well, let me do this. I'm going to respond to your comment off here, okay? So just going to
sure.
let you go right now, and then I'm going to respond. But basically what Timothy's talking about is a single-payer system versus what we have here in America, which is a privatized system for the most part, and it is not a single-payer. There are multiple payers of health care. Here's where you run into problems, okay? Because first and foremost, if you have multiple payers and you have a for-profit system, think about it. It's very simple. If, say, you want to start an insurance company, health insurance company, right? So say all of us, just everybody on the phone right now, everybody listening, let's all get together and we're going to start our own health insurance company. Well, first of all, what do? You have to get people to sign up, and those people have to pay you premiums, correct? Okay, so very simple. So we get all those premiums, and let's put it into one big bucket. All right, and so those are the dollars that we have as a company. And now, for us to make money, if we're for profit, any dollar that leaves that bucket is going to hurt our bottom line, right? So when you are operating in a for profit system, the goal of the company, of the health insurance company, it's not to keep you well. It's not to make sure that you get all the benefits that you were promised. On the contrary, a for-profit healthcare system, its main goal is to make sure that those dollars that you gave out of your pocket, you take the money out of your pocket, dump it into that bucket. Another guy takes the money out of his pocket, dump it in the bucket. We all dump it into the bucket. That's our pool of money, right, to get our services that we are mandated under an insurance policy. But every dollar that goes out of that bucket, little by little by little, guess what? That hurts the bottom line of that healthcare company. So what they have to do then is figure out ways to deny you care. I mean, make no bones about it. This is what for-profit health insurance companies, this is how they're set up. They are set up to put barriers to the care such that it makes it very difficult for you to access your benefit. And the more difficult it is for you to access your benefit, that means less money goes out of that bucket over time. And hopefully they're going to hope that you get frustrated, or you just don't want to even pursue it anymore, or you just kind of throw in the towel. And that's pretty much how a for-profit healthcare system works. I mean, if you have an HMO or you have a PPO or whatnot, you have to go through a referral process, right? Say you wanted to go see a specialist, okay? First of all, you got to make sure that specialist is even in your area or is under your particular health plan. And a lot of times what they do nowadays is they make the network so small so that if you choose a doctor, quote unquote, outside of your network, you know what they're going to do? They're going to make you pay a premium. They're going to make you pay a little extra just even to go see a doctor. So they're extorting you, you know, taking a little street tax out on you to see the doctor. But that's what they do. They make it very difficult. So you have to get referral after referral after referral. And then you have to wait, too. All the time while you're sick, you could have something very serious going on. And look, I experienced this with my own father-in-law, 80-something-year-old guy who was having, you know, weight loss, nausea, vomiting, persisting. And I had to personally intervene and call his insurance company. I'm not going to tell you which one it is, but it was one of these HMOs, privately held companies, where the CEOs of the company make tens and if not hundreds of millions of dollars off of us, and they don't even provide health care. And I had to say, look, I'm a doctor, and this guy, why is it taking so long? Why does this referral to get a CAT scan or to see a gastroenterologist, is it taking days? I said, this guy's getting dehydrated. He's getting weak. He's unsteady on his feet. He needs this test and this follow-up now. And even with me as a doctor pushing the envelope, it still took a lot of hoops that I had to jump through to get my father-in-law the opportunity to see the specialist that he wanted to see. And then long and short of it was, after he finally got to see the specialist, then the specialist ordered a CAT scan, and then that had to go through a referral process too.
I went through all that, Mike, and I had to wait like 2 weeks at some points just to get a referral.
Right. So this is all the for-profit healthcare system. And then ultimately he ended up in the hospital. He had to get a scope, and then he ended up bleeding through an ulcer, almost died. I mean, it was a horrible, horrible experience. But this is what happens in for-profit health system. When you don't have a single payer, all of these for-profit entities are trying to keep as much of your premiums in their bucket. They'll do whatever they can to make sure that money doesn't go out of the bucket. And then guess what? If too much does go out of the bucket, next year I can guarantee you your premiums are going to go up. They're going to extort and make you pay even more money to put right back into the bucket. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom will be back tomorrow, and then I will be finishing out the rest of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So definitely appreciate the opportunity to speak to Tom's national audience. And many of you are now on hold on the Freedom Line. So without further ado, let's start off with Dave from KGOE in California. Dave, welcome to the program.
Well, Dr. Mike, you are one who is so right on and so a voice that is desperately needed. I'm glad that Tom has you as a regular now on his national show. We, the people, are so terribly disinformed, and that, sir, is no accident. It has to do with this Fox News. It has to do with Sean Hannity and Rush. And anyway, I used to be one of your regular. You recall?
I remember you. I remember you.
95 years old. She used to listen to you every day and call you frequently.
Yes.
She was concerned that 911 was an inside job, that
sure,
elections were rigged and that kind of thing, and she was right on. And
absolutely.
So I'm saying today that the Social Security should be our key issue. That is, this is a plan in place to benefit us, the 99%. It doesn't benefit the 1%, and they're greedy, and they want to take everything they can, and it's there. Social Security has built up many billions of dollars in reserve, but the politicians reach their hand into that jar and take it for their criminal wars for profit. They take it for whatever they want for themselves, and now they don't want to repay it, and so that's why we're seeing Social Security as the offer to be cut. That's not costing anything. It's benefiting us, the people. I hope I'm putting this clearly.
Absolutely, Dave. You're doing a fine job with it. I mean, listen to the actual name of what it's called. It's called Social Security. So if you have security, then you want that thing to be there, and you don't want it to grow less over time. You don't want there to be an attrition in your benefit. I mean, the whole concept of security is to keep it secure. Could you imagine, like, if we talked about border security to the conservatives and start saying, well, listen, we really want, you know, border security, but we think the best way to do this is to take, you know, less National Guard at the border, or to take away the drones, or to take away half of the fence that we built. Then that really wouldn't be secure, right? When you start taking things away from security, then you become less secure. So if they think of that border like that, if there's less drones, or if there's less agents, or there's less military, whatever you want to say, then there's less security. It's the same concept with here. If there's less benefits, or benefits are not keeping up with the cost of living, then you're shortchanging these beneficiaries.
Well, we, the working poor, have been paying into that for years.
Right, and it's not an entitlement. It's a benefit that you paid into and you deserve, and it needs to be there, and they should stop playing around with it. You know, the problem is, Dave, is that they haven't been able to do what they've always wanted to do with Social Security, which is to privatize it. I mean, if they were able to privatize it, we wouldn't even be hearing about this discussion right now. But the fact of the matter is, we all stood up against the privatization of Social Security, and now that they can't get their filthy hands on everybody else's money to put in their pockets, now they just want to figure out a way to dismantle it over time.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mike. I tell everybody I can, get involved, get out there with a sign, get involved with Rest for Peace or Code Pink, something. This country is, we're being robbed everywhere we can by greedy special interests that just simply disinform us completely.
No, I agree with you.
It's good to have a voice like yours and Tom's.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Okay. Have a great day, Dave. Okay, there you have it. It's Dave. And look, there is a lot of greed. Look, just getting back, I'm going to get to the Freedom Lines here in a second. The conversation we were having at the top, at the end of the last hour, when I was talking about healthcare and how a private for-profit healthcare system, how they make money by just taking your premiums, putting them into a bucket, and doing whatever they can, come hell or high water, to make sure none of those premiums exit that bucket. So the other issue too, just so you understand with our healthcare system, is the problem that our healthcare system in America is what I would call a volume-based or a procedure-based healthcare system. And what do I mean by that? What do I mean by a volume-based, procedure-based system? In America, most healthcare providers get paid based off of the services or the procedures they do. So there is a financial incentive built into the healthcare system that if you do more, so in other words, if you do more surgeries, if somebody stays in a facility for, you know, X number of days, if somebody stays on, a hospice, say, a hospice gets paid on a daily basis. If they, the longer they stay on hospice, the more money somebody technically gets. I mean, I'm sort of overgeneralizing here, but that's in essence how it works. It's a volume-based system. So the incentive is not necessarily to provide the best care. The incentive in the American healthcare system is to provide a lot of care. So the problem is that you provide a lot of care, but you're not necessarily providing care that makes the patient well, or that keeps the patient out of the hospital, or that keeps the patient out of the intensive care unit, or out of the emergency room. And that's really, if you look at the Affordable Care Act and what President Barack Obama and Congress did, they're really trying to change the American healthcare system from becoming a disjointed, fragmented healthcare system where everybody's looking out after their own selfish interest. And whether that is the hospital system, whether that's the skilled nursing, whether it's the home health, whether it's the doctors, I mean, you name it. Most of the entities that I just mentioned in the past have not really worked collaboratively together. They've kind of focused on their own little sphere, maximizing their profit from that sphere, and that the patient really never ultimately is at the center of everything that we do. So that's the beauty behind the Affordable Care Act. What the Affordable Care Act does is it now creates entities what are called accountable care organizations, ACOs. And you can Google this and learn all about accountable care organizations. But it is a phenomenal, deep idea, very profound idea. And what they're saying now is, look, rather than volume-based or procedure-based, we want all of you guys to work together, with the endpoint being, say, 33 benchmark clinical parameters that we can judge objectively to make sure that the patient's getting the best care. I'll give you an example, like diabetes. Many people know what diabetes is. It's an abnormality of your blood sugars, and your blood sugar has to be below a certain level in order to sort of stave off any of the bad consequences of diabetes. Because if you have unregulated, uncontrolled blood sugar, you can ultimately over time get really bad outcomes. You can get blind. You can become blind. Diabetic retinopathy. You could actually have your blood vessels, your arteries become clogged up. And if they clog up, they can affect your heart. You can get a heart attack. If they go clogged up into your brain, you get a stroke. If it's in your legs and your peripheral vascular system, you can get gangrene and end up with amputations. So it's a very serious illness, diabetes. And what Obama and the Affordable Care Act is saying, why are we focused on when the gangrene happens and then we have to cut somebody's leg off? Why are we focused when the patient is now blind? There's nothing you can do. You can't see. Let's catch these things early on. Let's manage them aggressively early on. So there's a measurement, what's called hemoglobin A1C. It's a way to measure the blood sugars in your body without having to stick your finger, you know, four times a day over, say, like a three-month period or so. And what it does is measures your average blood sugar readings. If that hemoglobin A1C is below a certain percentile level, then the chances are that that patient who has diabetes won't get all these bad adverse outcomes that we're talking about, you know, just now. So that's what I'm saying is we need to move away from a procedure volume-based service to a quality clinical outcome-based healthcare system. And that's what the Affordable Care Act does. That's what accountable care organizations are. There's 33 parameters, whether it's diabetes. I could look at heart disease and whether or not you're on an antiplatelet like an aspirin or a Plavix or and cholesterol. Are you on the right cholesterol control medications? Are we checking the cholesterol lipid profile on a regular routine basis? All of these things will prevent ultimately or make less really bad outcomes, and that's how you save money in healthcare, by providing good healthcare, not necessarily more healthcare. Back in a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX, this is Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Alrighty, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. The Freedom Lines are packed. Let's go first, I believe, to Virginia, listening on Free Speech TV from Seattle, Washington. Virginia, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Hello? Virginia? Let's see. Oop, I locked her. Virginia? I think we don't have anybody, Eric. I'm just
going
to have to...
Just keep going. Move on.
I feel bad. They hauled so long. She was on for 50 minutes, and then... I feel bad that
maybe she fell asleep.
She might have fallen asleep. Or maybe hopefully she's okay. She's not in any medical jeopardy.
Might need some user insurance.
Exactly. All right, let's go next to, let's try Jerry. He's listening on WWRL in Long Island, New York. Jerry, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call. Well, the chain CPI, in addition to it saving the government very little money, and in fact, Paul Krugman, who in addition to being a New York Times columnist, most people forget that he's also a Nobel Prize winning economist, and he at least used to be, I don't know if he still is, he used to be a professor at Princeton University.
I think he still might do some work there.
Yeah, well, all the way back in December 3rd, he did the math on the whole issue of these different so-called structural changes to Medicare and Social Security, and specifically with respect to the chain CPI, he found that it would save the government very little money. So, right. But in addition to that, what it would end up doing, in my opinion, is that it would, the chain CPI would end Social Security cost of living adjustments as we know them and just end up financially hurting the poorest beneficiaries of Social Security, like my severely autistic nephew, Matthew, who's down in Florida and he has developmental disabilities. He may have to be on this for the rest of his life, 17 right now. And also these Republicans saw changes to Social Security. They're going to end up politically harming the Democratic Party in the long run and hurting their political branding as the great defenders and protectors of Social Security. I mean, just imagine in 2014 when the Democrats try to complain about what the Republicans want to do to Social Security and Medicare, they'll be able to come back. The Republicans will be able to come back at any Democratic politician and say, well, look, you have a Democratic president and you have many Democratic members of Congress who also favored cutting Social Security and Medicare.
And with respect to poverty, you know, the president, there's also a whole poverty aspect to this whole situation, because in the State of the Union speech, President Obama, and rightfully so, he said verbatim that in the wealthiest nation on earth, no one who works full time should have to live in poverty. And this is the whole irony, and this is how what the president said twice since the change CPI. If the same low-wage American worker becomes too disabled to work,
right,
then ends up on Social Security disability, you know, hypocritically and inconsistently, President Obama is willing to let this very same low-income individual now live in poverty due to a change CPI that would,
right,
end up shortchanging this poor person out of their Social Security-related cost-of-living adjustments in what is already very low minimal Social Security checks. Over time, they're going to receive less and less money, and they're going to end up living in poverty and having to choose between cat food and human food. And this is just, and like you and other callers have pointed out, this is just an attempt to chip away at Social Security,
sure,
to cut holes in the social safety net so that it doesn't work over time. And then eventually, Peterson and the rest of the Wall Street crowd can come in and say, see, we told you Social Security isn't,
right,
working. It'd be much
wasn't
better
working
in the hands of Wall Street. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Star of the beast, right? That's the philosophy. Star of the beast. Well, listen, Jerry, I appreciate it. Well said. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
All right, it's Jerry calling in from WWRL. But, yeah, it sounds like they should add a shackle to that chain as far as the chain CPI, because it sounds like it's going to result in a shackle for people who are already living off of limited means. Look, the example I would give you is this, and he had mentioned, Jerry, there, that the monthly benefits that you get from Social Security, these are not incredible benefits. These are things that allow you to just subsist on a day-to-day basis on meager amounts of revenue that you have at your disposal. So by taking those revenues and making them less, it's going to be even that much more difficult to live. The example I would give you again as a physician, always you look at things through the lens or the filter of a doctor. But say you're sick, okay, and you lost blood, okay, and you need actual blood transfusions to get you back to where you were so that at least you can, you know, feel like you can breathe, feel like you got some energy, you can conduct activities of daily living. You need that blood transfusion, okay? What they're saying here is that they're no, and that condition just, you know, is called anemia. When you have a low blood count in your body, it's called anemia. And sometimes people, depending on how low that level gets, you need a blood transfusion. So what they're saying is that, okay, let's assume for the sake of argument that everybody that who's getting these Social Security checks, they in a sense have a certain amount of anemia, okay? But every month, the government sends that little blood transfusion for you so that you can get by. Well, could you imagine me as a doctor saying, okay, well, I know you need this blood transfusion, you know, to live and to get by day to day, but guess what? I'm going to take about 25% of that blood that's in that bag right now, and I'm going to give you less of that. And then you say to me, doctor, well, gee, you know, I need the whole bag in order to, you know, do well. Why would you take 25% out? I really wouldn't have a response to that, right? Other than to say that, guess what? I think you got to man up and, you know, tighten the belt and, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and, you know, just live, you know, with the subpar hemoglobin level. You just have to live with less blood. That's in essence what we're asking people to do. We're in essence saying you're already anemic. You need everything that you need. And on top of that, guess what? We're going to put leeches on you now. We're going to put leeches on you so that sucks out even more blood from your system. So now I'm going to give you less blood, put the leech on you, and then guess what? I'm going to tell you, you know, I love you. You're a great American. You're a great patriot. And guess what? Vote for me in the next election cycle. That's in essence what we're seeing is the dialogue going around, the conversation. Again, I don't want to cast aspersion on the president quite yet because we haven't seen the full budget and its implications, which he's going to do on Wednesday. But based off of the leaks that we're hearing, based off of what Nicole Wu told us during hour one, it seems pretty for sure that some type of chain CPI is going to be utilized with respect to social, at least Social Security benefits in the future. Okay? Stay with us. We'll be back with your calls. The Freedom Lines are packed. 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Alrighty, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. The Freedom Lines are open at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go next in the queue is Cody, listening on Free Speech TV from Bonita Springs, Florida. Cody, welcome to the table.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I became 100% disabled after being assaulted at work by a wanted criminal that my company hired.
Wow.
And as a result of a law that only a few states have, you can't, the state I was in, which is in New Hampshire, you can't sue your employer no matter how negligent they are. Mm-hmm. And I spent most of my life doing good deeds. I've walked around the world in mileage to heal the sick. I pulled a 300-pound covered wagon 4,800 miles across the United States for the American Heart Association in 1979 to 1980. And then 10 years later, I rode across the United States in a miniature space shuttle in honor of Christy McCullough and the Challenger crew for World Hunger. I've raised a lot of money, you know. I started the Walk for Life, the Pedal for Life, the Flight for Life. I flew over to the Middle East in 2006 and handed out 7,000 phone cards on 5 military bases so our soldiers could call home for Christmas. And now I'm stuck trying to live on $1,024 a month. And I mean, I'm living on ramen noodles. I had to move twice because I couldn't afford to live where I was. And now they want to cut it. You know, it's like, you know, can you do it? How about putting a tax on the Wall Street transactions?
Right.
One Wall Street firm did 70,000 transactions in a second. If you put a nickel tax on those, well, there you go. I mean, there's lots of other ways to take care of the country without kicking the poor, which I now find myself, unfortunately, in that situation, down even more. I mean, if I have to come up with an expense, it's got to come out of my food.
Right, because, I mean, basically what you're saying, if you're 100% disabled and you can't work, you have no other sources of revenue, that $1,000 that you're getting a month, which is roughly $12,000, dollars a year, that puts you at pretty much poverty level.
Yeah, that's and I you know, I had good jobs before. I taught the developmentally disabled for years. I managed music stores. I averaged around $30,000 a year. But then I would take that money and I would put it into efforts to do charity efforts. I did charity work for like 40 years. I've got the keys to 50 cities. I've got letters from two presidents, congressmen, senators. And now I got to starve myself because I need to go see a doctor and I've only got, you know, Part B, Medicaid, or Medicare rather.
Medicare, right.
And, you know, this is ridiculous. I mean,
no.
How bad you got to put somebody down who's actually been doing good.
Right. Somebody's drowning out there and you throw them an anchor and say swim. Listen, Cody, I appreciate you calling in today and sharing your personal story.
Yeah,
with
and I called the White House, I called my senators, I called my congressmen, and I said, look, this is ridiculous. Why don't you guys take a pay cut in salary?
Right, you know, right. I hear you. All right, thanks a lot, Cody. All right, Cody has a very impassioned story there, and it's true. I mean, despite the fact that Cody's only getting $1,024 a month, and they want to cut that even further. But when you look at the
how do you even pay your rent and feed yourself with that kind of money?
I mean, that's really poverty level wages. You know, I mean, for an individual getting about $12,000 a year, you know, look in Texas. I saw this the other day, which is outrageous. You know, here in Arizona, we actually had a citizens initiative. We put it on the ballot that people, because it used to be 100% of the poverty level that you would qualify for state access, the Medicaid system we have out here. Then we did something where the voters said, wow, that even that's tough at 100% of the poverty level. I think we upped it, Eric, to like 150% of the poverty level so that more people could be included in that. But if I'm not mistaken, somebody can check this, but I saw the other day about to be able to qualify for Medicaid if you're poor in Texas, you had to have an annual income of $5,000 or less. So you have to be dirt poor to even qualify for some type of assistance medically in Texas. And Texas is also saying, Governor Rick Perry, that he doesn't want anything to do with the Affordable Care Act and doesn't want to receive the federal money that for 3 years in a row would pretty much cover it almost 100%. All those people who, when you expand the amount of people who can enter into the healthcare system, he doesn't even want that to happen.
That's crazy. You know, I mean, at $5,000 a year, It's kind of like a catch-22. That's not enough to find somewhere to live.
No.
And if you don't have anywhere to live, then you can't get a job. So I don't even know how you'd make the $5,000 to begin
with. And if you don't have health care, how are you going to pay for that? I mean, you look at health care right now. If you're a family of four, say a mother, a father, two kids, I mean, that can cost you easily over $10,000 a year. You know, just for health insurance.
Yeah, for family of four, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm pretty sure.
God forbid that you have any pre-existing conditions.
Right. Well, fortunately, with the Affordable Care Act, though,
right,
as that gets rolled in, that'll be gone. And
but right now, it's not.
Those discriminatory practices will be a vestige of the past. All right, listen, let's get back to the Freedom Lines right now at 1-866-987-THOM. Again, 1-866-987-8466 if you'd like to participate in today's program. Let's go next to Robin. Robin also listening via Free Speech TV in Poteau, Oklahoma. Welcome, Robin.
Oh, thank you for having me. You know, my husband and I, we worked and we did the grunt jobs. Now, I raised the kids, so I didn't have as much income in there, you know, on the Social Security. But we both ended up having to go on disability.
Right.
And where in the heck? It's, you know, what we had, what they took out of our paychecks, even mine, the more they took out, the less we got. We could not afford when we were working, could afford to buy health insurance. Now here we are disabled.
Right.
And we don't get a lot.
Sure, sure. So how do you feel about what you're hearing with respect to the possibility that Social Security benefits, if they use this new cost of living index called the chain CPI, that over time it'll take money away from your benefit?
It's a nightmare right now trying to make
ends meet right now. So anything that they take away could prove, you know, quite costly to you and make it a lot more difficult, correct?
Oh, yes. I get the state, the Medicaid. Now, they did pay for my teeth a little bit. They'll just pull them. But I need dentures and, you know, and the reason I had to, because I never got any kind of medical care most of my life.
Right.
So, or dental care. So here
now, are you on Medicare right now too, Robin, or just Medicaid?
I'm just the Medicaid.
Just the Medicaid,
and they'll pull them. So I had some of them out because they were making me sick. The ones I have, they're just kind of holding.
Right.
They're not making me too sick.
Wow.
You know, it's like I can't afford anything.
Sure, sure, sure. Okay, well, listen, Robin, we appreciate you sharing your story today, too, and thanks for calling into the Tom Hartman program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Look, I really appreciate Tom's audience when they call in, Eric, because he's got people from all walks of life, all different types of socioeconomic backgrounds. But what you're hearing from today, from the people like Cody and Robin, like, these are people who are really struggling to make ends meet, Eric. And, you know, why we would actually target that demographic, who are recipients, if you will, of the safety net in this country, and try to chip away at that benefit.
Easy targets.
Yeah, and I think that's probably right. They look at it as an easy target.
It's easier to take money from them than it is to get it from the 1%.
Right, because if you try to take it from the 1%, they got their army of lobbyists and people who will obstruct and obfuscate and try to make sure that doesn't happen. And that's unfortunate because, well, look, that's why we have this program. That's why you have the Tom Hartman program. That's why you have Progressive Talk Radio. That's why you have progressive organizations throughout the country, because historically, that's always what we've done. We've always gone out there and looked after the little guy, the little gal, because oftentimes they don't have that kind of clout. They don't have that type of voice. And unfortunately, in today's environment, money equates with power. If you have more money, more capital, then you could buy access to the chambers of Congress, if you will. You can buy access to influence, and you could buy access to legislation that pretty much gives you a privileged status in society. And that's obviously not what the founding fathers envisioned when they created this great country, but unfortunately, to a large extent, that often is what happens in our democracy. And hopefully, this robust discussion that we're having about the chain CPI, and we'll wait to see what happens on Wednesday when the president does officially unveil his budget proposals, whether or not that's in there or not. At that point, we'll be able to speak more specifically about the issue at hand. Okay, let's get back to the Freedom Lines. Let's see. Next up in the queue, I want to go to Richard. He's been holding for some time. and he's calling in from WCPT in Evanston, Illinois. Richard, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, thank you. I had some time to write down notes, so maybe I'll be more direct here.
There you have it.
Earlier on, I hope. But if I don't, tell me. But did I hear a fellow call earlier once again saying that the federal government's budget is like an individual's budget? You can't spend if you don't have it. And
yeah, I think he said something to the effect like it's like a credit card. If you don't pay your credit card debt, then you can't access more capital, something along those lines.
Yeah, well, I mean, and thank goodness. The government actually is probably pretty much like private individuals who have enormous debt, but it's just a crazy argument on their part. We've had debt in this country. We paid it off. Reagan doubled it. Oops, sounds like you're going to cut me off.
No, I'm not going to cut you off. You know what? Why don't you hold on? I'll put you on hold, okay? Because you did hold some time, and I want to make sure you have your say, okay? So if you hold on, Richard, I'll get you on the rebound, all right?
Sure.
Okay, let's put Richard. We're going to put Richard on hold right now. We're going to go to a break, and we'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX, you're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. And as always, during this segment, we have our very special guest from Talk Radio News Service, none other than Victoria Jones. Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you very much indeed.
Nice to have you back. So what do we got on the table today?
Former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher has died.
Yes, God rest
her
soul. And
that is leading news worldwide. It is a huge story. She was a towering political figure, both in Great Britain and internationally, and also, of course, because of the relationship that she forged with President Ronald Reagan here in the United States.
Wow. Now, what are they saying about the services? When are those supposed to be had, and where will that occur?
It's going to be at St. Paul's Cathedral. It's not going to be a state funeral, but it's going to be on the same kind of level that the Queen Mother and Princess Diana had. It's going to be a major affair.
Wow. And will that occur in the next few days, Victoria, or within the next week?
It'll be within the next week, I should think. They'll negotiate that with the family and work that out, but it'll be within the next week. You can really sort of sum it up with something that she said about herself in 1979, which was around the time she was elected to be Prime Minister in 1979. She said, "I'm not a consensus politician, I'm a conviction politician." And it was that "I'm a conviction politician" that helped her get her policies through, whether you like them or hate them. And I marched against them.
Right.
But it's I'm not a consensus politician. That was also her downfall. And she was brought down by her own party, not by the opposition. It was a coup within the Conservative Party that brought her down ultimately. Because
wow.
she would not seek consensus, and she brought about a poll tax, a tax on humans rather than on the homes that they lived in, which was supposed to be a rate. You have a rate tax on your drains and your water and things over there, and she turned it into a poll tax, a tax on humans, something that we hadn't seen since the Magna Carta. And
wow.
It sent people ballistic. There was rioting, and the MPs in her own party said, "Wait a second, we don't like this either." And she would not bend, and there was a coup.
Wow, wow. Well, what else do we have happening other than
Harry Reid went ballistic on the Senate floor today.
Finally,
over the issue of a possible filibuster by 13 Senate Republicans over gun control legislation. Senator Mike Enzi of Wyoming joined this group today, made a statement which did not seem to justify filibustering. Nevertheless, he made the statement. Harry Reid said, among other things, that the Republicans complain the Senate isn't used for regular order, and then said, "Talk about speaking out of both sides of the mouth. This is the poster child of that. Now when they encounter an issue that they're afraid to debate in full public view, they want to thwart debate altogether." He also said, "Shame on them," and he also talked about how the least Republicans are the parents of 20 children murdered with guns at Sandy Hook Elementary is a thoughtful debate. The least Republicans owe them is a vote.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, Victoria, with respect to the filibuster, I know generally at the start of each new legislative session, the party that is in power at the time, wherever the Senate Majority Leader is, they have the right to change the rules. But Harry Reid also said today, if I'm not mistaken, that he could change the rules even right now with a simple majority. I'm not sure if that's the nuclear option, as it's referred to, but do you think he's willing to sort of play that card, or is he just bluffing at this point?
No, I think he's getting close, not only because of this, but because of the lack of confirmation of judges.
Right.
He's getting really ticked off about that. And he can change the rules with a majority vote. Yes, he can.
And they have that majority. Interesting. What else has happened in Victoria?
Also, the Senate, this is astonishing, unanimously approved Mary Jo White to lead the Securities and Exchange Commission. That's the SEC today. They acted quickly when they came back from their break to approve the former federal prosecutor, who's very tough, has prosecuted terrorists and mob bosses, to lead the Wall Street watchdog, signing off on her confirmation by unanimous consent. That doesn't happen anymore.
No, we don't often see consensus like that.
No. And according to President Obama's top climate advisor, the White House will enact greenhouse gas emission rules for power plants in the, quote, not too distant future, unquote. The proposed EPA standards for coal-fired power plants are, quote, pretty historic and very much in line with the president's broader climate objectives, Heather Zeichel said. Now, she made the comment after a recent Washington Post report suggested the administration might postpone and tweak these emissions rules. So she's correcting this report. Environmental groups back these limits, but they want the president to go even further and impose greenhouse gas limits on plants that are already up and running. But she didn't address that. She didn't say whether that was actually going to happen or not.
Can the president do that via executive order, or does he need Congress's backing to do that?
So this is something the EPA can go ahead and do. Now, it can be challenged in court, but it's something the EPA can go ahead and do on its own.
Okay, all right, so there doesn't need congressional approval for that. Anything else, Victoria?
Just that the U.S. and North Korea have designed a response proportional to the provocation of North Korea, just in case anything happens. For example, President Obama has ruled out striking at missiles while they're on their launchers, when they're easiest to destroy, unless there's evidence they're being fitted with nuclear warheads, something like that. But then they would take other action if they were actually being launched. So they've got various levels of response. One of the unknowns is what President Park would do, the new South Korean leader, the first woman leader of South Korea, who's the daughter of a famed South Korean dictator from the Cold War, whose model, by the way, she says, is Margaret Thatcher.
Interesting. All right, listen, Victoria, as always, it's great to speak with you, and thank you for the update and those pearls of wisdom and knowledge. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we'll be back at the top of the hour with more of the Tom Hartman program. Stay with us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for today and also Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Tom will be airing his regularly scheduled broadcast tomorrow. But right now, we do have a special guest on the line. I'm going to get to the Freedom Lines after the interview. But first, let's get to David Haynes. He is the managing partner for Cochran Law Firm, and he's here today to talk to us about an issue which had previously aired on one of Tom's programs about trust. And what happens when you have the ultimate violation of that trust, particularly when it comes to your doctor? So without further ado, let's welcome David Haynes to the table. David.
Hey, doctor.
It's good to hear from you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, so David, tell us, give our listening audience sort of the backdrop of this particular case that we're going to talk about today with respect to violating the trust of the doctor-patient relationship.
Yeah, this is a case that's coming out of Baltimore at Johns Hopkins, Mike, and it's a tragic situation. There are some themes here, though, which are relevant to the rest of the country as well. Some of your listeners might recall when we discussed this story before with Tom last month, Dr. Nikita Levy, who is an OBGYN who was employed at Johns Hopkins, who was under investigation for videotaping his own patients, took his own life. And in their home, in his home, the authorities uncovered 10 hard drives and 6 servers. The he had been reported by one of his fellow employees, another nurse, for a concern over videotaping patients using a pen-like camera. And as it turns out, this recording had been going on for many years. At this point, we're not sure how far back the recording goes. But unfortunately, this was, of course, the worst kind of violation between a doctor and a patient privilege. And there are likely thousands of patients. Well, there certainly are thousands of patients right now who are wondering whether they were videotaped or not. And a lot of other boundary violations and patient violations have also come to light.
Now, let me ask you this, because particularly he was an OBGYN doctor, correct?
That's right. He'd been at Hopkins for 25 years.
And generally, at least the way we were trained, is that you're usually when – now, Nikki, now usually when you're in the room with a patient, you're supposed to have at least a chaperone or someone else there to assist you. In these particular cases, was that happening, or was he in there just – solely on his own?
Right. You're exactly right. And in fact, Johns Hopkins had put into place their own internal policy as well. And there are obviously national standards and JCO standards on this, but they put in place their own internal policy. And this is particularly important with in male OBGYN situations that there be a chaperone, be a female chaperone present. There are many instances where our clients are telling us that Dr. Levy would either just go into the room by himself, or there would even be a female nurse and he would ask them to leave the room. And unfortunately, a lot of things were happening as far as inappropriate pelvic exams, these internal pelvic exams without gloves, unnecessary, and so forth. A lot of these patients did not know any better. Some of them had – he was the only OBGYN that he had ever seen, that they had ever seen. He was seeing multiple generations of some families. Some patients would complain. Many did complain. Some would ask to if they could see another doctor, but they were told – well, you're a Medicaid patient, and no one else in the system will accept you as a Medicaid patient, so you don't really have any other choice. You have got to continue to see Dr. Levy. So there were systemic violations, and we're obviously looking at that from the employer standpoint. Johns Hopkins is a fine institution, of course, and they're a leader in the research in many fields. But this happened at a particular clinic, the East Baltimore Clinic, that they had been serving, and safety the protocols and other guidelines were clearly not being followed, and he was just running this clinic in a deviated way, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Now, let me ask you this then, David. What recourse do potential victims have then? I mean, it sounds like the scope of this violation of trust is quite widespread and don't really have an absolute number right now, but what's the scope of it?
That's right. It is very wide. He was a very active doctor. He saw thousands of patients over the past 25 years, and even just in the last decade or so, likely thousands of patients. So right now, all of those patients are very anxious about whether or not they were videotaped in these very private, vulnerable moments, whether or not that videotape was shared through these servers, which were recovered in his basement through some sort of underground internet network or otherwise. The federal authorities and the FBI are, of course, involved as well. At this point, we do not know exactly what is going to be done with that videotape, if it's going to be sort of deep sixed, so to speak, so that because it would be a re-traumatization of these patients, obviously, to have to go through these tapes and make identifications and so forth, which would be very problematic. So many patients have retained counsel. Our firm represents several hundred of these patients, and they are going to be pursuing claims against Hopkins, and will be undertaking an investigation along the lines that you discussed. Why weren't the chaperones there? why was this not discovered, that he was doing this videotaping on the premises? How is it that all these internal exams and boundary violations, very out of line, inappropriate medical care was given? How could this have been allowed to persist for so many years? And if I may add, this is not only a situation which is unique to Hopkins, but there's some larger themes here, Doctor, and that includes the corporatization of healthcare. And Hopkins was continuing to expand and add, buy more and more hospitals. And this is what we're seeing around the country, is that the healthcare system is really becoming part of the corporate world, and your relationship where the doctors ran the hospitals and your community is really no longer the case in many parts of our country. And so we're going to be pursuing the investigation as, while this was going on right under their noses right in the city of Baltimore, the CEOs and the COOs of Hopkins medical system were pursuing greater profit by other acquisitions. And that's a disturbing trend, I think, that your viewers should be aware of in the medical community.
Well, no, we actually alluded to that earlier. We were having a discussion about the healthcare system overall and how one of the problems that I see, David, in the healthcare system as a physician is that it's really become a volume-based business. In other words, the more volume you can turn over, the more patients you can see, the more, you know, beds you can fill in the hospital, the more hospitals you can acquire, versus really looking at the patient, who should be at the epicenter of everything we do in the healthcare system. And I've been in healthcare for over 20 years now, David, and I have to say, I agree with you, is that it's very sad to see this corporatization of our healthcare system, with the primary goal being profit, and the secondary nature is the patient, his or herself. And that to me is very disconcerting as a physician who's been practicing for several decades, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better, David. It seems to be getting worse.
Yeah, and your perspective is very important and consistent with what we're seeing in our practice as well. And medicine has become big business, and as you say, the more we tilt towards that direction, unfortunately, it's profit over people, and the patient and the patient's priorities they're not the top priority anymore. And because how else could a situation like this be allowed to occur in a situation like Johns Hopkins? If it's happening there, obviously there's concern about quality controls around the rest of the country. And so for your listeners, we certainly don't want to cause alarm to them, but they need to be aware of what their rights are, what the standards are, that they have a right to have a female nurse present in the room. And if they're concerned about, they feel uncomfortable about the care that they're being given, they should ask another colleague or another physician about that. And each patient is their own best advocate, of course, as you know.
Sure, no doubt about it. Hey, if people want to find out a little bit more about this, or if they wanted to contact you, David, is there a way that they can access a website or something?
Yes, absolutely. We have a website of CochranFirmDC.com, or visit us on the national site, CochranFirm.com, or call 1-800-THE-FIRM, and we'd be happy to speak with anyone and give them more information.
All right. Well, listen, David, thank you for your time on the air. Keep up the great work for being a patient advocate. We need more patient advocates in this healthcare system for sure.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you for having me.
All right, there you have it. David Haynes, managing partner with Cochran Law Firm. We're going to be back, my friends. Stay with us. The Freedom Lines are going to be open at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. And I believe we do have a very special guest who's going to join us, correct?
That is correct.
When we return here in just a minute, so stay tuned for this mystery guest.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. And Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in. And as I told you, we have a very special mystery guest on the line right now, but I think you will instantly recognize who this person is. So without further ado, let's welcome the mystery guest. Tom Hartman.
Dr. Mike, how are you?
How are you, Tom? Guten Tag.
Yeah, danke schön.
Yeah.
I got off the plane about an hour ago. I've been up since 11 o'clock last night, your time, or our time, Eastern Coast time, to take the 6-hour train ride from Steinach to Kulmbach or to Frankfurt, and then go through security and get on the plane and get here and everything else. So I'm a little less than totally coherent, but I wanted to call in and say hi. I was hearing your program about the health insurance companies earlier. I was listening on the car and the taxi in from the airport. Brilliant, brilliant stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had a funny story to tell you.
Yeah, well, let's hear it. Well, before you tell the funny story quickly, how did everything go with Salem International? The audience is well aware of what you were doing, and we talked about that organization, Tom. It seems like a phenomenal organization. Maybe give us a quick synopsis.
It is. Oh, it's a great group. We're doing, you know, I've been doing volunteer work for this group since 1978, and Louise and I started this community for abused kids up in New Hampshire based on their work at hunterschool.org and salemchildrensvillage.org back in 78. And in fact, I'm president of the board this year, still have been all these years. But the and the German organization is the basis of it. The guy who founded it you know, every year on his the anniversary of his sort of birthday death, they were within a few weeks of each other, we all get together, and we went to his grave, and then we went to a walk through the forest to this place where he has a little altar that he had made to, where he used to go to pray. And that was kind of the solemn part. And then the rest of it, you know, we spent 3 nights drinking enormous and absurd amounts of wine and drinking wild and singing wild songs about, you know, the old South African freedom songs and some cool stuff. It's great people. People from Scotland, people from Africa, people from England, people from Australia, people from all over the world.
Wow.
And it was just a wonderful, wonderful time.
Excellent.
But it's funny, on the way back, I got to the airport in Frankfurt, and the Europeans now, they're so like, you know, we're not scared like the Americans are. You know, we're not like, you know, George Bush and Dick Cheney terrified, you know, trying to provoke fear and all this. So you don't have to take your shoes off at security. And the shoes that I have little metal buckles on the top of them. And so I said to the guy, I know these shoes are going to set off the metal detector. And he was like, no, no, because in Germany, everything has to be done the way it has to be done, right?
Right, right, right.
We have our ways.
And so did they let you go through?
Your shoes on. So I went through with my shoes on, and sure enough, they set off the metal detector. They don't have the X-ray machines or the cheered off porno X-ray scanners or any of that stuff. They think that's all just absurd beyond the pale. But I went through the magnetometer, you know, the normal thing that, like, you know, when I go to three times we've had dinner with the president here in D.C., that's all they do, actually, is the magnetometer. And I went through that, and the alarm went off, and so the guy had to come over, and he had to, you know, wand me and everything. And I'm like, I could have told you, take off my shoes. And he's like, oh, this is the way we do it.
But you got through.
It was so funny. Yeah, I got through, but, you know, it's the story is, I think, that, you know, nobody asked me if there were liquids in my bag. You know, nobody,
right.
You know, they didn't make me take my shoes off. You know, I've heard so many stories of people getting athlete's foot in America, you know, from taking their shoes off and going through these lines, you know, where people in front of them have god-awful cases of athlete's foot. None of that in Germany. They're very proud of that.
Very nice. But, now, Tom, you're going to be...
Don't wear buckles on your shoes.
You're going to be in Vegas this week, correct? Maybe let the listeners know about, you're giving a keynote speech.
I'll be on the air tomorrow. I'll be doing my show tomorrow. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'm one of the keynote speakers at the National Trial Lawyers Association, Mike Papantonio's group. And Pap is a regular on the show. And, in fact, I think you had earlier in the segment somebody who is also a member of that association on.
Yeah, David Haynes.
And, go ahead.
No, I said yes, David Haynes. He was on the program earlier.
Yeah, from the Cochrane group.
Correct.
Yeah, they're good. They do extraordinary work. And these are the people who are standing up for the little guys. And we really, really, really need to be supporting them, because the Republicans want to take them down. I mean, this is the last group that's standing between the big multinational corporations and the average person. And this whole thing, you know, this phony thing called tort reform, and I know you know this inside out, and so I'll let you rant about it rather than me, but last year I spoke there with James Carville. I'm not sure who else is speaking this year, but Louise and I are going to go out there and give a talk. So I hate taking, you know, almost 2 weeks off. I almost never do. In fact, in the 10 years we've been doing this program, we've never taken a vacation. I took a few weeks off when I had surgery, but that was it. but this is pretty important stuff. So I'm looking forward to it, and you know, I know you'll do a great job.
Excellent. Now, what's your speech going to be, Tom?
Thanks so much for filling in for me. You, Mike, Dr. Mike, are genuinely one of the best talk show hosts in the country.
Oh, my lordy. Well, thank you very much, Tom.
Wow.
That's very kind of you to say that.
Yeah.
Very kind of you to say that. Hey, so just quickly before we leave here, so what is going to be your speech? What's your speech going to be about at the keynote?
I think it's going to be about the importance of standing up with the little guy. And also, we're having a special meeting there. The people from Free Speech TV are going to be there, and we're going to have a special meeting on alternative media. You know, building out media infrastructure in the United States, it's progressive media. So that's the other reason that I'm going is this is pretty critical stuff because we're seeing progressive media under assault across the United States.
Yeah, no doubt about it, no doubt. All right, well, listen, Tom, we appreciate you calling in today. Again, thank you for your kind words. That really means a lot to me. And obviously, we look forward to hearing you tomorrow and obviously thereafter. So keep up the great work that you do and have a great time in Vegas.
Thanks, Dr. Mike. Keep up the great work.
All right, thank you. All right, well, there you have it. None other than Tom Hartman himself, my friends. So we'll be back with more of his show when we get back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. We're going to get to the Freedom Lines right now. I know people have been on hold. Richard, you're first up in the queue, but a special thanks to Tom calling in. Eric, I felt like I was in a parallel kind of a universe there.
I'm sorry.
There you have it.
My mic.
No, I was like.
Yeah, it was kind of strange. But
here we are substituting for Tom Hartman.
And there he is.
And there he is calling in on his very own show.
Right.
So, yeah, it was kind of neat, actually. But he's a great man, Tom, doing great work. And it's always an honor to fill in for him, as always. And a special thanks for his kind complimentary words. So, without further ado, let's get to the Freedom Lines at 1-866-987-THOM. First up is Richard, who's been holding on for quite some time. So, Richard, as promised, though, we will get back to you.
Well, thank you. I spent my time wisely. I'm looking at ZFacts, which talks about the national debt graph by president. And I also got out my trusty Forgive New York Times Almanac to look at the debts as well.
Okay.
And if anybody is criticizing Obama, they really don't have much of a historic perspective because Reagan and Bush were the guys that really drove the debt up. Now, it happened under Roosevelt, but that's when the war occurred, if anybody can remember back that far. And can anybody remember back that Clinton had balanced, had surpluses?
Had a surplus, trillion dollars plus surplus.
Yes. Well, I don't know the exact, I mean, the numbers were like 260, but the thing is that people are losing track of is that our problems are because of a gigantic recession, and Obama's spending so-called debt that, you know, and remember government, the whole premise of my call is that the government is not like an individual. And Paul Krugman is the guy who makes this point, I think, better than anybody, which is that the size of the debt right now is just fine.
Right. I mean,
it's not great, but it's not catastrophic. And that it at a certain point will become a problem if things aren't done. But to limit it, but one has to remember that we're in a recession, so the amount of money coming into the government is low, and that the fixes as well to some of these problems like Social Security could be easily cured by increasing the FICA deductions, which are capped at $113,000.
Correct.
Even pensions lost $800 billion because what do the pensions do? They invest in the market.
Right.
Why is there debt in the United States government? Well, we don't have tariffs. I mean, every other country tariffs us like out of control. We don't tariff anybody hardly. I mean, pretty minor stuff. So the less money is coming in. You know, they want to, you know, kill off starve the beast is what we're hearing.
Correct.
But this has to stop when people are just, I mean, people don't have any recollection of anything anymore. And that anybody who thinks that the government is like an individual is out of their mind because we wouldn't have World War One, World War Two. Iraq, you know, should we mention Iraq and Afghanistan?
Right.
That were
right.
Done off the books. So
sure.
I've ranted. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, listen, we appreciate your perspective and thank you for holding patiently.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
There you have it. That's Richard from WCPT calling in. But the other thing about Paul Krugman, too, is I love Paul Krugman's work in the New York Times, and he is a total advocate that, quite frankly, we haven't done enough with respect to spending, to investing, to get out of this particular economic doldrum, if you will, the recession. And he is not a huge fan of the type of austerity that you're seeing in different parts of the world that, quite frankly, haven't worked, whether it was in Italy or Ireland or obviously in Cyprus. You saw what was happening there, where banks now were pretty much seizing people's deposits to pay off for their gambling
behavior. Did they end up doing that after all?
Well, they came up with kind of like a little different type of thing. We could probably talk about that maybe later in the week, but you know, that's pretty scary when you put money into a bank and you're depositing it into a savings account, and because the bank decides to go gambling and they are now teetering on the verge of bankruptcy, if you will, they want to take your savings that you have there in that particular bank and garnish them, take them away from you to pay for their malfeasance. I mean, it's just absolutely stunning that something like that is even possible in modern day times.
Wouldn't that cause a rush on the banks? Like everybody?
Well, it did. And what happened in Cyprus is they shut the banks down, not for a day or 2 days. They shut them down for a week.
So you just couldn't get your money.
You couldn't get your money for an entire week. This is why, look, I used to laugh at my friends back in South Philly where I grew up, where they said, hey, the best place for your money is underneath your mattress.
We're buried in your backyard.
We're buried in your backyard. They might be onto something here. All right, well, look, let's get to some of the other Freedom Lines right now. Callers have been holding very patiently. Let's go first to Tim, who's listening via free speech, and he's out there in California. Tim, what's on your mind today? Hello? Tim?
Wakey, wakey.
He's up. All right, I don't hear him, so I'm just going to go to Bill on the line from Free Speech as well. Bill, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
Good.
I'm on Social Security disability myself, and when I hear the president talking about putting this stuff on the table instead of raising, like you said, like your last person on there said about raising the FICA taxes on the rich who can afford it, we should be expanding Social Security and taking care of it, not cutting it. And I would just like to say I would hope all the Democrats in the White House would stand up to the president and defend Social Security.
No, look, and I agree with you, Bill. Like I said earlier, I know I gave the analogy with a blood transfusion and anemia, but another analogy would be, you know, like somebody who's got lung disease, right, and somebody who needs oxygen to live. And could you imagine telling the guy who gets oxygen, look, we know you need 3 liters of oxygen continuously in order to live comfortably and live well, but you know what? We're going to cut you down to 2 liters or 1 liter. Or guess what? We're going to take the oxygen off completely. It doesn't make sense. When you have a social safety network, you know, in place, it's the base, right? That's supposed to be rock bottom. So I never.
When you talk about people paying their premiums, and I, a good friend of mine spent most of the winter in Florida for cancer.
Right.
Him and his wife both stayed down. This is a true story where another couple was there. She's in the hospital for cancer. They had an insurance company. I won't name the company. But while she's in treatments for cancer there, their insurance company raised their deductible to $25,000.
While she's getting the cancer treatment. That's horrible.
She had cancer, and while she's in the hospital trying to get help, they raised their deductible to $25,000. That's a true story.
That is absolutely outrageous. And hopefully, look, you just heard.
Isn't Rick Scott, wasn't he involved in one of the largest Medicare scams in our country's history?
Absolutely. Absolute 100% true that Governor Rick Scott was.
He was giving all of his insurance buddies down there a free ticket to do whatever they want.
Yeah, I think he was involved with Health South, if I'm not mistaken. It's sort of like a rehab facility. And I think he was a former physical therapist, if I'm not mistaken. But you are correct. Like two people, actually. It was him involved in one of the biggest scams of all time with respect to Medicare, or at least very high up there. But also Frist. Do you remember Senator Frist, Bill Frist? And he was from Tennessee, and his family owned a company called Columbia HCA, Healthcare of America. That company, too, was also involved in huge, huge Medicare scandal, fraud, et cetera.
Yeah, they paid a big fine, and they never did pay back what they stole, but they paid big fines, and it's unbelievable. This guy is now the governor of Florida.
Yeah, no,
it's
absolutely shocking how how these are the ones who speak with forked tongue, but yet they're the ones who often benefit off of their evil-doing ways when it comes to our tax dollars, and they try to make the government as the evildoer, where in reality they're using the government for their own evil-doing and using it, like you
sure.
said,
and
to
I,
the extent to get very rich and wealthy.
You end up finding out when you go in for these type of treatments, too, that most of the doctors, I don't know what type of doctor you are, but most of them, they only want to treat the symptoms and not really treat the problem.
Right, the whole patient. I'm an internal medicine doctor, geriatric, so I actually care for elderly, and I also do a lot of hospice work, which is end-of-life care. So those are the two things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so all right, well, listen, Bill, I appreciate the call.
But you got some really rotten people in some of these insurance companies that they just see you as a meal ticket anymore.
No question about it.
I think we should have a national health care plan, and we should either have it or not have it at all.
But I'll tell you this, if they would have gone to the single payer as an option to a public option, remember the big debate about the public option, and see, this is where capitalism takes root, right? If you really believe that the insurance company's got it right and they provide the best product and the best services when it comes to a benefit plan, put it up against the public option. Let everybody buy into Medicare and let's see, go toe-to-toe. Let's see how the public option does versus the private sector. But see, the difference is the private sector doesn't believe in competition, because that really is at the root of capitalism, where you have to compete to earn someone's business. But they want to rig the system such that they don't have to compete, and that's why they were so adamantly against the public option, because they knew that if the public option was available to the citizenry at large, that I think you would have seen millions upon millions of people opting for the public option versus a privately paid health insurance plan. So, all right, listen, Bill, I'm going to take the other callers. I appreciate it.
We've got a Republican governor here in Michigan who is absolutely just destroyed. We don't even know all the laws that he's signed right now, but anything he's ever touched, he's just plain destroyed. And I contact my representatives, my senators, all the time. I criticize them for what they do. There's no public discussion on anything, and now he wants to raise gas taxes, and he's just trying to reinvent different ways to collect money off the poor.
Yeah, to fleece the American people. No question about it. All right, Bill, listen, I got to get run. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Okay, there you have it. That's Bill.
He's still going on.
He's still going on. He's very passionate about what he wants to say. Listen, we still got a whole bunch of people on the Freedom Lines. I know the Freedom Express is chugging along, pulling up to its final stop, the final destination for today. But I'm going to do my best to get everybody in. Kathy from Naples, Florida. Larry from Charleston. We got Mike from Vail, Arizona in our backyard here. Effington, Pennsylvania, all over the country, people calling in to the Tom Hartman program. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Broadcasting live from 1480 KPHX, Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. All righty, welcome back to the final segment for today. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom will be back, as you heard earlier, from his surprise guest appearance on his very own show. He will be doing his show tomorrow as regularly scheduled, and then the remainder of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I'll be sitting in substituting for Tom. So in any case, let's get to the Freedom Lines right now. First up and holding the longest is Larry on the line from Sirius, or actually listening on Sirius, from Charleston, Arkansas. How are you there, Larry?
Hello, doctor. You know, pardon my dialect, you know, not many people are going to know where I'm from, probably. But I want to talk about Social Security and Medicare and SSI.
Okay.
I'm 65. I'm fixing to go on Medicare here on May 1st. So, you know, well, let me tell you a little bit about me before I start asking questions about it that no one could seem to answer.
Okay.
You know, I was sitting in high school class back in 66, in the spring of 66, and I got a, you know, a little old draft notice in the mail. You know, I was number six on the lottery draw, you know. So that means I was going to have to go into the military.
Uh-huh.
Well, joined the Air Force and stuff and served my time, got out in late 69, and used the GI Bill to go to college, you know, drawing $300 a month, you know, actually was able to do that for 4 years, you know.
Awesome.
Live on that stuff, you know, and get her degree in chemistry, you know. Well, I went to work in chemistry, and I was paying in all kinds of Medicare and Social Security, you know, that sick of stuff, you know. Well, anyway, you know, I got 10 years of eligibility, over 10 years of eligibility in Medicare and Social Security. So, you know, I'm eligible for it now, you know,
right.
Social Security and Medicare. But I actually got real disabled, you know, about 1980, you know. I ain't going to tell you what the disability is because it turned your little listeners off, you know.
Okay.
But anyway, I was totally disabled. Well, I was roaming around, couldn't work. You know, I actually had to hit the streets, you know. So I lived on the streets about 3 or 4 years, you know, in Texas and California. Well, finally, I decided I better check in somewhere, get something taken care about it, you know. So I checked in the VA hospital about 90, you know. Huh. Well, I was put on VA disability, total disability. But it's a non-service-connected disability, you know.
I gotcha. Okay.
And so, you know, I only draw $1,038 a month. But my question to you is, you know, I've paid into Medicare and Social Security, you know. Why
right.
can't I draw Social Security retirement and VA disability? Why can't I draw both at the same time, you know?
Yeah, well, let me answer this, Larry, and I appreciate you calling, and thank you very much for that story, and thank you for your service as a veteran. But with respect to, you know, drawing from the two different types of benefit pools, I know that's oftentimes a very difficult road to navigate because there are at times separate things of money, there, vats of money, if you will, where you can access one benefit and a separate thing with rules and regulations for another benefit. And I know it's very, very difficult to navigate that. But what I would encourage you to do is to speak to your VA representative. I know, you know, I've worked with the VA systems in the past, did some training in the VA down there in Tucson, and I know that you are assigned definitely someone who can oversee the administration of your benefits. So I would talk to them and find out the specifics behind that, because without knowing the specifics, it would be very difficult for me to really give you any prudent advice, and I don't want to lead you down the wrong pathway either. So, all right, listen, let's get back to the Freedom Lines. I know we got a shortened segment here, and let's go next to Jim, who's listening in Virginia on TuneIn. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, yeah, thank you. You know, it's very interesting to listen to a string of very liberal people thinking and like to throw a little bit of libertarian and real economics into this discussion.
Please do.
You know, I think people have to at least admit that maybe the government doesn't have it absolutely perfect on what index to use. Now, maybe the chain index, it may be what Obama is proposing is not good for seniors, but I think people have to admit that people paying into the Social Security system have on average received 3, 4, or 14 times more than they put into it. And you can just look at, you don't have to go to any conservative place for that. Just go to PolitiFact. It came out on February 14th, 2013.
Right, but let me ask you one quick question before you go forward, though. But say hypothetically they get 3 or 4 times what they put into it. But if you're putting that in throughout your lifetime, you know, how does that compare then to what your benefit would have been if you just put it into, you know, whatever, a stock or an investment vehicle? So it's not just what you put in. That money would have accrued over time, whether it be interest or
well,
value
of the
stock, et cetera.
You would have actually done better if you would have put it into the stock market. But
right,
you know,
but I just want to make sure that you're clear and not sort of giving the audience a misrepresentation here. It's not just like you put it into a vacuum. It's that money is of value and it would have accrued a certain amount of value over time. So that 3 to 4 times
that
they took.
Why?
Over a 30-year period, you don't think if you put in money, you would get 3 to 4 times the amount?
Go to February 14th PolitiFact article and read all about it. It's not a, you can't call PolitiFact a right-wing place at all. And so, I mean, if you're in that situation, and the problem also, I'm an economist also, and the problem with Paul Krugman is, I don't know, he went completely off the reservation. He used to be a pretty good, objective economist, but now he's basically just a shill for progressive economics. I mean, he acts like all the people that say, oh, you know, there's $1 trillion or there's $4 trillion surplus in Social Security. Well, that is a farce. All there in there is government bonds, and that's no different than any other kind of debt.
All right, well, listen, Jim, fortunately we got to go, so you got the last word right there, but we appreciate you calling in and offering another perspective, a libertarian perspective, but I happen to disagree with you. Any case, Tom will be back tomorrow, my friends, and I'll be back Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So as always, democracy, it's a participatory sport, so tag, you're it.
Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.